1946.
All right, this is an interview with Charles Vogan, for Youngstown State University Oral History Department. The interview is being taken at 1847 Esterbrook Northwest in Warren on June 8th, 1975, and it's about 8 o'clock. Okay, Chuck, what did you do on the railroad? What capacity did you work in?
Trainman, my first time.
The first time?
Yes, you had to hire out as a trainman. And I come from the Pennsylvania at first, and it got too serious of losing too many men. And I rode a hump down there, which you call a hump. You get on a string of cars and take it down into the yard, which was about 8 to 10 miles. And it was very foggy down that way. So there was a lot of lives lost because they run into different ones. Most of the time, the hackers are people that didn't work too long. They just stayed there a while and then quit. And if they found that their car had some liquor in it, they would make an effort to derail it.
Oh, where in Pennsylvania did you work?
At Rochester, Pennsylvania, down there.
Down near Pittsburgh.
Near Pittsburgh, yes.
when did you hire out in Pennsylvania?
Around 1923.
23 in the
Pennsylvania. And then I come over to B&O on 25 and went there as a trainman. So the men at that time stayed pretty long, and there wasn't very many promotions for quite a while because they was working until it was after 70 years old. So if they passed the examination. As long as it did that, and there wasn't any pension, you know, at that time, so there wasn't anything to give up for, only work there.
Well, in 25 when you came, now there wasn't very, very many years before the Depression came. Did you work through the Depression?
No, I didn't. I was furloughed in 1930. It was in the middle of the 30s that I got furloughed. So I went to work with the crew. They called them the Gandhi Dancers then, which
okay.
Was, yes. And I stayed there a little while until I was cut off of there. And brother that I worked with some time ago, he says, how do you like your job? And I says, not too well, it's pretty hard, you know, like in these ties and this rail. He says, would you take a job in a service station? I said, I sure would. So then he saw this fella that had the service station at West Market Street and told me, later on, that I had the job as a grease monkey and also on the pumps, work on the pumps there, and then wash cars, and I said, I'm glad to do it, and I was there for a duration of the
depression.
Depression, yeah.
So when did you go back, along about the war?
Well, I had different jobs while I was there. I worked for the Pinahatal. That was my last job during the 30s. And along about, when the Second World War started, why they began needing crews, and they said, well, we need you now. Otherwise, they would let me work. I'd tell them to call it a younger man, see?
Mm-hmm.
For my job, because it was just a matter of working a little while, and then I'd be cut off again.
So you were actually on call during those years.
Right, right.
But
long.
You declined when they called you.
Right, we still held our seniority, see, as long as we didn't quit or anything like that, see. So after I got back on that, why, I was there for the rest of my time, see. I weren't ever furloughed.
That's interesting. Well, you hired out, first of all, as a brakeman. What'd you do, ride the head engine?
Ride the head engine, yeah. First, I was down here like Jerry was.
Down here at DeForest?
Yes, and that was sort of field work, you know, all walking.
Mm-hmm.
Then I, as a seniority, well, you could bid on the jobs. When there's anything up for bid, you could bid on them. So I bid on what they call the Butler Buck that went from DeForest to Butler and Quebec, and that was a good job, which gave me a lot of overtime, see.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, we worked 16 hours a day, and that's all we worked 16 hours, we had to be relieved and brought in.
Now on this, the Butler Buck, was it a freight haul or kind of
a freight haul? Yes. And I think I'd rather do that than footwork, you know, in the yards where we classified the cars, see, to go to different places.
Well, now as a brakeman, you had to classify the cars and get the trains made up. Is
right.
It in the yard?
Yes. When the cars were brought in, the yard master then classified them, and we straightened them out. He'd give us a switch sheet there, and we put them in the track that he wants. And then as the other trains come through there or anything, well, then they would pick it up and take it to their destination where they would transfer it.
Did you ever have any trouble with the... with the conductors of the way you put your trains together?
No, we all had a pretty good idea of what they wanted.
Mm-hmm. Were there certain conductors that wanted trains made up certain ways?
Yes, well, the yardmaster, we went according to his instructions, see?
Oh, I see.
But we made, a lot of times, we made our own moves to make it easier, see? And after so many cars would go maybe Youngstown eastbound or they would go westbound, well, it would get them in the proper tracks.
Mm-hmm. How many sidings have they got up there at DeForest or tracks that they can move cars around on?
They had 5 switching tracks, and they had about 2 sidings there that they could come in on and other trains and set off and pick up, and then they supplied Trumbo or the Republic down here with their ore and their coal, and had done a lot of switching over there. It was about 6 or 7 tracks over there where we lined, switched them out, and got them in places where they were.
Down at Trumbull.
Yes.
Now, Where was the roundhouse?
Roundhouse was, where the coal and the water, the Painesville men, they come down there, and it was just about 700 yards or something like that from the yard, yardmaster's office there.
They did have a roundhouse over here.
Oh, yes, they did.
Oh. when did you work the, you worked out on the main line?
Well, in around 45, coming back from one of our movements there, going to Butler and back, while we were getting pretty close, we outlawed Newcastle going east. So they had us take rest and then come back the next morning. Well, when we arrived there, while we was in a hurry to put everything away, we had to put our own train away and our caboose that we was riding. So that's when I got in trouble with dropping the caboose into stub track. And the fella that was riding the caboose, I don't know whether you understand it or not, when they dropped a car or any part of the equipment there, why, they got away back, and one fellow handled the switch, and the other fellow that worked on the rear end there, the flagman, he'd get the slack on there and he'd pull the pin, and the engine would grind up the straight track, and the conductor would handle the switch, and then that would put it around there, and then you'd shove it in the clear. Well, it was getting into this stub track, right into one of their old shops in there, and he hollered for help. That's when I was in trouble. I tried to give it to him, and he was going too fast, and I twisted around there and fell down and busted my foot, almost lost it, which caused me a year and a half off of it. So I was off a year and a half on that.
I suppose they didn't have any hospitalization and workman's.
Well, yes, they took care of me. They took me to the hospital and got me fixed up there, but he done all he could. Then I had to go to Akron for a bone specialist, which he fixed me up and wanted me then to, they would give me a disability pension, see, which I was too young in service, you know, to make anything out of it. So then I said, no, I would take a job out in the road, and I could hold some passenger jobs too, which wasn't too hard to handle. I didn't have to do too much walking.
Mm-hmm.
So from then on, why, I left there and went out on the main line from Newcastle to Willard on a B&O pool. Then sometimes I would work on that Pittsburgh run from on passenger as a brakeman.
Now which runs would this be? Which
numbers? Well, that'd be 17 and 18.
That was the Willard to Pittsburgh.
No, no, that was from Willard, from Cleveland.
Cleveland to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Cleveland to Pittsburgh. Then when I couldn't hold that, I'd go back on freight train from to hold, and in the meantime, I was promoted as a conductor, took that examination, so you had to be qualified on all railroads.
What was that exam that the conductors took like?
Well, it was a written exam that they had to tell them were all the rules and regulations, and if you wanted to run a train or anything, you had to qualify on where all the sidings were and all the stations were.
Now, out on the main line, that would have amounted to quite a bit more than on the Painesville run or something.
Yes, we worked mileage out there, where you worked hourly at, like at DeForest, at the yard job. See, you worked 8 hours there for a day, and at the road where you was working mileage, by sometimes you got on a working train, which would take you about 12 to 15 hours to make, working on your way, setting off and picking up. But if you got on a QD train, that was a lot nicer. You went through there in about 4 hours and had a day and a half made. So that was pretty nice. And as long as you didn't have trouble, like a hot box or anything like that, you had to get right out of line. Was delayed, but outside of that was wonderful. And then if you got in there and you was first out or something like that, you might double back.
Now on the what's a QD train?
QD is fast freight and through freight too. They called it fast freight, and then QD is right straight through. You don't do any switching.
Refrigerated cars.
Yeah, well, yes, we had all of those. And they was put on most any kind of a train, though.
Oh.
But, and they had these here piggyback trains.
They came later.
Yeah, that there was.
Well, and then, now you had straight orders on the main line.
Yes, you got clearance as you left Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
You had to go up and get your orders at clearance. Then you got all you want by then is blocks. See, if the blocks are clear, why they give it to you. If everything was clear ahead of you, why went along with that. As long as you had to clear a block and there had no delays, why you went right along.
Yeah, now on the passenger trains, what are the duties of the conductor on the passenger train?
Well, his duty is, first he sees that everything is right there and takes orders, and from the other conductor, like they come from into Pittsburgh, well, he turns the tickets all over to him, and they see who's in the Pullmans and where they're going and check with everything, and then writes up his line of work that he has to do and turn it in when he gets into his destination.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of that, why, busy the most of the time.
Yeah. Now on the freight, you rode in the caboose.
Well, yes. When you was running the train, or if you was a flagman back there, you rode back there. There's two riding back there, and there's three up in the head end, like the engine,
mm-hmm.
fireman, head brakeman, and also the engineer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, where would the passenger conductor ride?
Well, he finds a seat all of his own, unless they're all taken. And then he has to go up in the club car or someplace like that and find a seat to do his work.
Mm-hmm.
He has all those things to check. The tickets. Then, of course, he goes back when he stops at each one of these stations. He collects the tickets and goes along and puts a step in there to their destination, so they don't bother them again. So.
In the back of the seat.
Yeah.
Right. There's more work for the conductor to do on the passenger train than on the freight train?
Well, yes, to a certain extent, unless years ago we used to have to ride all these here cars up we put in, see? And then he would be busy until he got to the next destination where he was going to set off and picked up.
Okay, now, when you picked up cars, then it was up to you to write them into your sheet. Now, on this long sheet, what did you call it, where you wrote your cars up on?
Well, it was
sort of a log or something.
Yeah, it was a log. For their destination, you had to put what was in the car.
Okay, now on the sheet. Now, as you went along on your route, you set trains off.
Set trains off. And cars off.
Cars. I'm sorry. Okay. on the sheet, it told, as I understand this, the sheet would tell every car in the location of the train.
Where it is, yes.
As you set the cars off and picked up cars, how did you adjust your sheet to indicate where these cars were in your train?
Well, you had to make a special sheet out to see where it is at the head end, from the head end to the rear end. See, and sometimes, well, at that time, there was 60 to 80 cars until they got hauling about 150 to so like that. And then it was all made out by the clerk before it was handed over to us. See, so we just turned them in when we got to our destination, and he had another sheet going out. Like Newcastle was our terminal on freight. Pittsburgh was our terminal on passenger. So it was 150 miles from Newcastle to Willard.
Why did they feel you could work a longer route on passenger than you did freight?
Well, it only takes so much time, see, to make that run from Willard to Pittsburgh, which is about 4 hours and a half to 5 hours. As long as you wasn't delayed anywhere, why went that long. So it was a steady problem with.
That would be your passenger run.
Yes.
But did they feel that you worked longer hours on the freight train?
Oh, yes.
That's why.
But during the old time, when it took you about 16 hours to make it there, why the company was very much pleased with that, see, because you didn't go on overtime until you was out there about 12 hours, then you got about 4 hours overtime.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, why we weren't delayed too much. But then they tried to get it back on an hourly basis. Organization didn't go for that, so still had that. And our regulation of movements. If we picked up more than 3 pickups, why, we got a local day out of that, and that made a little more money than that. See, if it was working a workable train.
Mm-hmm. In other words, as you went along, if you made more than 3
pickups,
then they added a day to your...
No, not a day, just a little higher rate of money, see? A little more money connected to that.
I suppose. That's interesting. In the caboose, what is the inside of the caboose like?
That's our home.
Mm-hmm.
We had, ice box. Of course, we supplied that ourselves, whatever we wanted to put in there. It was eatable stuff, like you make sandwiches or anything like that. But if you was going to stay in it overnight, well, then you had a lot of stuff which you cooked right in there. And we had a coal stove for a good many years, and then afterward, well, then we got this oil stuff after they got the diesels. But when they had the smokestacks and engines like that, why, then we had coal.
Mm-hmm.
And we lugged our own ice in there, in the caboose, and we always had coffee there.
I've heard about that coffee.
Yes. About as strong as you can handle it.
Oh, dear. Well, there must be bunks or something.
Oh, yes, there is. We had our own blankets, and there's four bunks in there down below, see? Two on each side, and there was, I don't know what you call it, like underneath, they had a place down there that you could store your bedding, and you get that out. They furnished us a mattress, see, but we furnished everything else, and we kept it nice and clean.
I'm curious, did you bother with sheets on your mattress, or did you just roll up in blankets?
Mostly in blankets, but the majority of them had sheets, and we liked them back west home.
It was rather civilized then. What type of food did you cook on your stove?
Most anything you want. Beef stew, most of the time. That was like these here buns and things that went along. Hobos. And in the mornings, we'd get up and we'd have eggs, bacon, and toast, most anything, flapjacks.
And who was it that made the big knee pads on the road? I've heard about those big, thick pancakes that somebody used to make.
Well, the flagman was usually put in charge of that, see, as long as he was back there while he planned dinner. And of course, we paid for most, you know, the grub that went on there.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then we'd have a chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And
was it fresh chicken as you went down the road? Or?
That's right, yeah. And a lot of times, corn too, you know, when corn was in season.
Yeah,
there was
a good bit growing along beside the railroad.
Yes, and then we'd get out, and while he was back here flagging on the lake branch, we got lovely strawberries. And we'd get some milk, and we was right in heaven. See.
Now, you surely didn't take time to milk a cow as you went down.
No, we didn't do that, but we knew where to get it, the best place. Had all that ice and everything to keep it right.
Now, did you ever work the Painesville Run?
Yes, with I.J. Brooks and a lot of those old-timers was up there.
Who did you go to work under originally?
I forget their names now.
No.
There's a lot of old-timers that
you work with. Lovejoy?
Lovejoy, yes, he was one of them. And
Jerry Vannetti.
Jerry was up there. Jerry was, he got his feel of it and he stayed home pretty well, so he was down in
he worked the yard lot.
Yeah, yard lot. And I broke for Jerry a lot of times too down there. Lou Holland, a lot of those. Most of those older men are dead now. Griffith, Glenn Griffith.
Yeah, brother of Judge Griffith.
Right, yeah. Oh, I don't know. They had different names for everybody. Nobody would understand.
I heard one today, something about a cauliflower.
Yeah.
Well,
but as we reminisce, see, there's things that one brings up and recalls another. But after you get so old, why, you forget all these names and things that do happen along the way.
That's true. When you went to Painesville, then you stayed in your own caboose.
That's where we stayed, in the caboose.
As I understand, the caboose was assigned to...
Yes, they all had their own caboose, see, and they were very particular about it. And we kept the cock loft windows and everything, you know, clean and everything.
That's that little cubby hole.
Yeah, and we watch our train. And every curve we come around, why, was we would look for hot boxes or anything that was dragging or anything that you could tell immediately whether you had trouble or not. That's how we saved the company millions of dollars. Before it ditched the train, why, we would stop. We'd put the air on and stop the train and go up there and see if we could haul it or cool it down or set it off. Then get to the phone and tell the dispatcher what we had. Then he would have the idea of reversing the other trains around us, see, so until we got rid of that there hot box.
How close are the phones located?
Well, they're several miles between, but you had to know where they were, or the sidings or anything where you could set a disabled car off.
Mm-hmm.
If you see smoke or sparks of anything, you know, going there, well, you better find out what it is. And when I was running the train, why, oh, there's some that's pretty careless and some another. You get a lot of young students out there, they figure, well, this is pretty nice, and it's all padded up in there, and they can lean back, and the first thing you know, if you didn't watch them, they were asleep. Then you had to shake them out of there and say, my friend, you're going around your side, the curve's going your way, now look the train over. So they'd get their head out and see what they could see. But it was very easily to detect, see,
mm-hmm.
anything that's going wrong, because you'd either see some fire flying or smoke. And if that was it, well, you were in trouble.
Now, if something was dragging, then you would see sparks or...
Oh, yes. It would go along there and break rigging down or something like that.
Did you have any interesting experiences?
Well, yes, a lot of them. We had a lot of derailment.
What would cause the derailment?
Well, one thing, you burn a journal off, which is a wheel, see.
Mm-hmm.
And that would upset the train, or the car there, see, and that would take everything with it.
You tried to get to the journals before they...
Yes, that's the idea of these here curves and things where you go around, that's your job. And always your telegraph office, see, as you go by, he looks him over, and you look at him to see whether he's going to give you a high ball or a sign that you got a hot foot up there.
High ball sign means to keep going.
High ball is you're okay, everything's fine. So you keep on going. That's what we're doing.
What else would cause a derailment besides that?
Well, you could have a broken rail. See, if you run onto one of those, and then the train, that car that's going over, the way it's loaded or something, would spring that there around. Well, it's out of line then.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would go into that and jump the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So then, first thing you know, you got them all.
Did you ever, you had some derailments during the time you were?
A lot of.
What would you do with a derailment then? How would you handle it?
Well, the only thing you can do is get to the phone and tell them what trouble you're in, see, in derailment, and then that's exactly what he wants you to do so he knows what's going on. Then he can put that track out of service and just use one track. Now, the first thing he wants to know, how is number one or number two track, see, if you're going west or east, see.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, if you haven't got clearance or if they're all over everywhere, well, it's clear out of service, and then he's got to reroute them, like over the Erie or some other.
Now, when the trains run over the Erie or some other road, they have to have a pilot.
They do, yeah. Nobody's qualified on there. But if they run over our tracks, well, then they got to find a conductor or somebody that's qualified to take them over our track for the head end and also the conductor. So they get them there.
Now, some of these conductors, after they work the road, certain distance for quite a number of trips, they get to where they can tell by the sound of the the train just about where they are. Is that true?
Well, yes, to a certain extent, if they don't go to sleep. Which they don't do. No, they might just close their eyes for a moment.
Do you ever have any trouble with your young men you were breaking in?
Yes. I was pretty sincere, and some of the other conductors was, and others didn't care whether, how they done. When they brought a young head out to me, you know, or hired somebody, well, first thing they want to know how, when is payday, and where do they get paid, and how long do we have to work, or when do we eat?
Mm-hmm.
So I tell them when they're down there, I said, no, if you think it's money you're after, yes, you get a pretty good money, because they get just as much money as a fellow that's been there all these years.
Mm-hmm.
They get straight pay right from there. I said, one thing you gotta want is getting on and off these your cars, because there's lots and lots of people that's got your arm or something like that, or you're coupling them cars up to see that they couple up right and you don't get in between them. So that engineer, when you give him a backup, said, no, stay out of the in between the cars there, because we're liable to get it.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever have any of them that came to the misfortune of getting it?
Well, I've seen other pictures like that, but no, I was pretty lucky on anybody getting hurt on mine when I was working with me. Because, oh, I don't know, if you take your work sincere, like, well, you're on the job pretty well yourself, and you see that he's on there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of young fellows who don't like to work with conductors like that, because they say he's too damn particular.
Mm-hmm.
Or he don't have to be that way, he's too cautious or something. Well, you do have to be that way, because the dispatcher wants to know what's going on, and if you have trouble, get the phone, let them know what's going on.
Now, what does a dispatcher do?
He runs the train. And as long as he says everything is all right, he keeps you going. But if you're delaying something and there's another train back of you, you know, that's, like I said, a QD, a through
mm-hmm.
train that
mm-hmm.
doesn't have any work from Willard to Newcastle, and you're not making the time, he's going to put you in the hole, which is the siding.
Mm-hmm. Did it? They have a dispatcher in every tower?
No, he's just the tower man there. Mm-hmm. See that he goes for what the dispatcher tells him to do. Put that fella in, see that's coming there. We got a fella pretty close back of him. And
mm-hmm.
he's got work to do and he hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing we don't like out there, is getting hooped. That's what they call run around, because
mm-hmm.
you work first in, first out. What you like to do. Now, you talk about the steam engines there a while ago, and how did they get the coal up and...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the engineer and the fireman is pretty close. Now, if they're buddies, why, they'll try to get. Now, so-and-so's call after us, I know they got a... If we can get through here, why, we won't get hooped. Hoop means he'll run around you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's first out at your destination, see? And then he'll be called ahead of you. Well, we're on a steam jack going, and Warwick, we have to stop for coal and water. Well, he says we can get by without the coal if you can get so-and-so to help you. He's busy, you know, keeping him steam, see, which he wants to, he has to have to make the train go and keep it going. But if he lacks and that their old steam goes down, well, then he's losing power, just same as you would be if you were driving a car.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see him yakking like that, well, I'm interested in that too. That's when it was on the head end. Head brakeman. I said, yes, I'll get you coal. That's when it runs short. If you know you get so well, they'll run out of coal. See if they get close to home. So I get back there, let him give him all the steam he can get. See, keep that boiler hot where he wants it. If I think we're going to win, if I don't think there's any chance, well, I don't have to do that. That's his job. All I have to do is set cars off and pick them up on the head end and watch the train, see. So I get back here with the shovel, and I put it up where for years and can't come up with the name, the screws, you know, it takes this here coal in, automatic.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then it feeds.
The stoker.
The stoker. Yes, you're more of a... She didn't remember long enough. But little things like that, they burn in, and you're mad at yourself because you can't come up with a name. I know exactly what.
Well, that's okay. These stokers, though, mentioning those, they could be set to...
Yeah, they set and they bring it all in, see,
uh-huh.
until a certain time, and then they're back there at the rear end of this here engine, see.
Yeah.
And if they run out, well, then he runs, he's got to get back there, and there goes the steam, see, because
yeah,
he's
right.
not there watching it, so he can get that.
I suppose eventually the coal wouldn't fall down into that conveyor.
Sure,
and
yeah.
somebody have to get back there and pitch
it.
Get it loose.
Uh-huh. Well, I worked my head off lots of times and still got a hoop. Got into Newcastle, which we didn't want to do.
Yeah.
If you get hooped a couple of times, you're sure you've got these all planned out that you're going to get a working job back to Willard, see, and he's going to maybe get a QD job,
yeah.
which we all make the same money if you don't get on overtime, see. I'll work, say, 10 to 12 hours, make it my day, where he'll work maybe 4 hours and be through. See,
right.
See, that's where the catch is. So it's pretty nice to crawl up in that engine or the caboose, see, which end you're working on, and ride right there, watch the train, and get there. Fresh as a daisy when you get in there, but when you go in there in a working train and work a whole 10 or 12, 13 hours, well, you're ready to go to bed.
Let me turn this tape over. Okay, we were talking about these steam engines and the coal and the stokers and so forth and so on. Now, where would they take on?
Warlords. Yes. And then they would fill it with coal and water, and they'd have enough coal and water to go. But it takes 30 or 30 or 40 minutes to fill that with coal and water. We would help them out in that, see, too.
Hey, yeah. You were saying they would carry a reserve tank of water?
No, this year, not most of the time, unless it was, if they had too much time, they would call another engine. See, but they had to have another crew on that engine. There's where they lost out when they changed in. When they tried these diesels out on there, and they were so happy, especially the engine and the farmer, see. Boy, I hope we get some more of that. And I heard the engineer say, and that he was right, he said, brother, he says, we're going to feel awful bad when they come in with all those diesels. Sure, they'll be clean. You'll go in clean and won't have to change clothes. You won't have all this dirt and things and everything in your eyes, you know, looking out there and everything. But you're not going to have any job, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can hook, tie on, any amount of diesels they want to tie on with one crew, the engineer and the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't require near that amount, you know. Every time they put on another engine, they had to have another engine crew.
With the steam?
With the steam.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't operate those, but you can the diesel. That's exactly what happened. And they weren't promoted so much then, but the diesel was nice.
On the, when you have more than one steam engine together, who took care of the air for the train?
The head, he had control. They put it all onto him.
Of even the air on the...
Yes, he'd have to, because he's watching the blocks.
Mm-hmm.
See, the second engine, all he did was give him help.
Mm-hmm.
See, they kept as much steam and stuff and ability, you know, to haul that train. He was just the same as he was in front, only he didn't have the responsibility. Took all the car, all the stuff off of him and the rear there, and he took care of the air and everything, and took care of the blocks.
Mm-hmm. Now, did the length of the train or the number of engines have anything to do with the pay of the crew?
No, they all got paid the same as their regular money.
Mm-hmm.
Like whether you were second train or first train or engine or whatever you was, you got that amount of money or whatever you when called for it.
When you sit out on the road, they got paid that amount.
That's right. And they got paid that amount too. Where there was that distance,
mm-hmm.
and you went back and forth, why it was mileage. A day. That constituted a day, so
mm-hmm.
and 50 miles, a day and a half, so pretty nice, you know, to go in there and make a day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to where you ran regular runs?
Yes, I was
on the passenger.
No, not exactly on the passenger. I was mostly extra.
Oh, you were extra on the passenger?
Yes. Yeah.
But you had a regular run on the freight?
Yes, because they stayed too long. See, these three men on that, it wasn't compulsory even when I quit. But this new agreement got out, this annuity, then that forced us to quit. But the company wouldn't tell you to quit. As long as you passed the examination, you could work. But there are rules and regulations. Didn't quit at that time, you automatically lost your annuity, which they had for you.
Was there anything on the road that bothered you or bugged you, as we would say today, in your job?
Well, to a certain extent. Now, of course, the crew in the back,
mm-hmm.
that's the rear end. The train crew, we had one following the head end and two in the back. Well, we got different engine crews. Well, we was going along and we knew darn well what kind of a trip we'd have by the engine crew.
Mm-hmm.
He'll do business, see? He'll try to do this. Other folks said they don't care. What do they get into there tomorrow? Their pen.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't like that at all, because conductor, and also when I was a conductor working on there, we wanted to get through, and we'd do everything in the book to get it there.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we saw some smoke up ahead, said, are we going to stop or not? The engine crew don't see that. If he looks back and sees the hill stop, see, if
mm-hmm.
he sees smoke, but nevertheless, there's a lot of times that he don't see what we see. So I've crawled, and so was he, because we thought there's a brake sticking, or tied up a hand brake. See, that's what we, sometimes when they're classifying these, why they tie up a hand brake on these cars so they don't go out the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done that several times to keep them getting hooked, which was bad for us or the company. They didn't want it at all, the guy that, but they wouldn't say anything as long as they didn't know it.
They didn't want to crawl over?
No, of course not, but we used to crawl over out when we had the steam job. I'd walk clear over the train, which was mostly boxcars or gondolas or what there was, to get to the rear end. Maybe I knew it was going to be an hour or so to get something to eat back there. And coffee,
mm-hmm.
I found it on the head. That was years ago. But after they got these diesels and everything like that, well, you wouldn't dare get up on there, because they was going as fast as a passenger train was, mm-hmm. if you had the proper train.
How fast is one of the steam trucks?
They go between 65, 70. 70 was supposed to be the amount they would go, you see, but a lot of them chiseled on that a little bit to make up a little time. But we have these here signs and everything, just the same as you do on the highway, what speed to take the curve on or anything. If they come down to 30 mile an hour or something, they had a sign up there, a regular board, see, that said 30 mile an hour on this. Yes. So if you went, you know, pretty hard around there and derailed, why, it's your baby. Because they know, the dispatcher knows from the time you leave Willard until you get to the first telegraph office.
Mm-hmm.
They know whether you're on time or whether you've killed time or what's wrong. And the conductor's got to have that in his report or tell him over the phone what the delay was.
Mm-hmm.
That's mostly the dispatcher's job. He wants to know what happened. So that's one thing that I used to do, was getting the wrong crew.
Mm-hmm.
Because we weren't hit together, or like the Butler Buck. Now your dad, now I worked with your dad on that. But he had that regular, now we had an engine crew like that. See, or Mike Fenton, I don't know if you know Mike. Well, I worked with him too. And we knew exactly just how it was going to work.
Well, some of them, I suppose, rode the train a little bit smoother than others.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And,
now, you were on the passenger. Did you have dining cars on?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. What passenger runs did you
work on? Well, I was on 17, 18, and 9, and I was on all of them.
You were extra boarding.
Well, yes, but I held regular jobs different time, but you'd get a brakeman on there and he really does the conductor, or you want to cut in on that, see, and get all the ideas and qualify yourself, you know, on those. And then you got to know all these here places too, the telegraph office and how to write them up and everything.
When you were going to go from one job to another, well, like from the Painesville run out on the main line, or from freight to passenger, did you have to make a certain number of trips to qualify?
Well, in the first place, well, you can't go out there unless you're bumped or, you know, you're cut off. And then if there's a younger fellow than you out there, well, you can go bump in.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the way to get out of it. Now, to run a train, when you go over on that, if you're a conductor, well, if I've never But out on the main line, I got to go in and tell him where the things are, where the sightings are, everything like that. And if you don't come up with the right answers, he'll tell you to take another ride. See, and you're on your own, see? You crawl on a train and go over the road here between Newcastle and Willard and get all these here memorized. And if you don't, well, he won't pass you.
I see, you would do all these trips on your own time then?
Well, yes.
These extra trips.
If you wanted to work on them,
yeah.
You did. But as long as you're working a head end or a flagman on that, well, you can run it then, see? And then you always have the answers before you get a conductor's job. And then when you're qualified and promoted as a conductor, why, you're minute you there's a vacancy, they put you on the extra board, and you get any crew that they need you on. So you know, the conductor lays off, you're there, and they call you to run.
Do you ever have any interesting experiences with the rest of the people on the railroad?
Oh, yes. There's good ones and bad ones, but it's the idea of handling people that makes a difference. And you gotta bite the bullet, as they say now, see, and a lot of them and smile when they're very provoked, you know. And at that time, most of the time when I was on pasture, it was hard to get a seat, see, and to satisfy them and everything. And then we did have real fancy cars and clean and everything, but towards the end we didn't hardly have anything. We didn't have any passengers. Didn't have any nice coaches or anything, and it was rough. The roadbed was rough, and I don't know, they tried at different times to discontinue, you know, the run, but they wouldn't allow them to, so I guess they thought, well, we'll just leave the track going, we'll either lay off the people that does this work. When they got to their destination, like Chicago or Washington, see, they went all over these here trains, coaches and everything, and they come out there beautiful. But about the end of my career, they were terrible.
When did you retire?
67.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just before Amtrak came.
Well, no, Amtrak didn't. No, they stayed on about 2 to 3 years, I think, after that. And then they got a lot of them cut off, and then finally it was running them halfway and turning them right to Akron and back.
On these passenger trains, now the dining car crews went farther distances than...
They went the whole distance from Washington to Chicago.
Now they had a crew car.
They had their, when they went to bed, the conductor always had, or the, they had a conductor on the Pullman, too, see.
Uh-huh.
And they always reserved space back there for them to go to bed, see. So they had to be put to bed, and there's two chefs and a couple of helpers in there, you know, and they were real nice to... The conductor or anybody on there that does some favors.
Mm-hmm.
So they had me, but fed up pretty good where I was way out of line weight.
Mm-hmm.
I weighed about 190 pounds, I think 80-some to 90, drinking and eating their pies and their muffins and everything. Oh, they're wonderful cooks.
Yeah.
You get a wonderful dinner.
On some of the railroads, they had like a crew car they carried for the dining car employees and so on and so forth, you know. But B&O never did that.
No, not as I know of. They did in these Gandhi dancers where they had these here, but they set them off where they were going to work at a certain place.
Let me ask you a little bit about them now. Just what did the Gandhi dancers do?
Well, they kept the roadbed in shape, see. They carried all these ties and tamped a train where they have automatic works. The car's working now, and the dispatcher gives him so many miles on a track, say from Youngstown to Niles Junction or something like that. Now you've got so many minutes or so many hours to work that. You better be through.
Mm-hmm.
So they come along and they have regular diggers. Mm-hmm. He goes along there and first they have the work train go out there and scatter this here stone, you know, along there, and then they come along and tank it. But it used to be these Gandhi dancers, they had a whole crew of them, say 14 or 15 of them working. Excuse me. And they would really do a job because they had foremen on with them, see?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd tell them how much stuff there of it, and when they really tamped those roadbeds down where they would be solid. Where this, they would be solid when this, but well, it didn't stay very long at all. So that's where they were.
That's interesting.
But it cost them too much money to have the fellows working like that. They were workers.
The Gandhi dancers did a better job than the machines.
I think so, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you can tell them that when the track is bad, and in fact,
That's very interesting, some of these things.
Oh, and it's just a matter of, you know, forgetting a lot of this stuff, too,
mm-hmm.
you know. So. But there's a lot of them old-timers, you know, long before my time
mm-hmm.
there, could tell you how they spent their hours. They're pretty good poker players, too, you know, when they land at the place rather than go to bed, they play poker. Most of the time until it's time to call.
Then they didn't take their rest hours and sleep.
Oh, well, it was moving so slow then at that time. See, they took them about 16 hours to get over there, most of the place.
Do you play poker with the rest of them?
No, I don't even gamble hardly at all. I'm too much of a loser. When a loser can't afford to play, why, best to stay out of the place.
Very good. But do you recall any interesting experiences you want to put on tape? Any anecdotes to people?
Oh, I've run onto a lot of people that, you know, travel. And
mm-hmm.
I was hurrying back here one time at the number 8. I was working number 8. I went back to the Pullman car to see if this one party was up. And I was in a hurry to get back there, to get back to the head end again, so I'd be there at the station. This old lady was walking along there, I was living along, and I didn't want to, the aisle was just big enough for the wanting to go by there, and I didn't want to disturb her, and I wanted to get back to see if this fellow was ready to get off. So we didn't haul him by. And she was going along with him, and I said, I believe I can help you if you let me. And he said, are you looking for the ladies' room? And she says, yes, but I think I can handle it. And she we got in there pretty soon. I come back and was in a hurry again. There she was walking along again. And she give me a little, says, you're all right. I don't like people like you. You know, it's nice to old ladies like me. I said, oh, that's our job. That's what we like to do, is help everybody out. But she gave me a little, I don't know whether I can remember or not, but she says, here's a little poem I want you to look at. I read something about isn't this a beautiful morning? Now what some son of a bitch. what is it? She says, tear it up or something. That's not the quotation. But different things like that went on, and then we've had people that we had to get off at Akron had a heart attack or something like that. Call, throw a message off, like Warwick, you know, to get an ambulance there or something. And we've had drunks, you know, to take care of. And we're coming in late, a lot of places where we want to get in and out of there, like number 6, going east. And we say, now, anybody that's not going on this train, please don't get on. And everybody's crowding around there. And they get on, the first thing you know, when we get off the platform, why, let me off, let me off. I'm sorry, by golly, we can't get the train stopped now until we get away down around, and we're not going to let you off in the wilderness down there. The next stop is Youngstown. We got into a lot of, you know, they said, well, we wanted to help them on. We got porters here. That's all we can do is they'll handle the luggage, this and that. But that's the thing that we run on to a lot of times, you know, and try to be nice, but men.
Did you charge them fare when they went to Youngstown?
Well, we should have. Yeah, lots of times. Some of the conductors would charge them, see. And that's not all we want to. And yeah, but I'd give them a message, see. If we haul this brother by, pick him up, take him back to Akron. Mm-hmm. And if we was lucky enough, we'd meet number 5 going back, see, at Youngstown.
Otherwise, he had a long layover.
Yeah. But they knew better than to get on there, but they wouldn't say a word. They'd just crawl on there, and I don't know, they'd think they was getting a seat or something, and seats weren't available at all. But we got by.
What would you do with the drunks on the train?
Well, if they annoyed somebody, coming out of Cleveland one night, we were falling back here, he was sitting there bobbling along, singing, and I said, the lady right along there says, he's drunk, he's annoying me. Well, I said, we'll see what we can do. Oh, he says, I'm not doing a thing. I says, well, you're disturbing these people, and they say you're drinking. Now, where's the bottle? Oh, I wouldn't think of bringing a bottle out here. So I reached around a little bit, and I found the bottle. I said, well, now, I'm going to give you this back if you leave it alone. The first thing I know, he was back here, bringing the bottle, singing. So I went back, and I said, oh, this is it. I'm not going to put you off, let you go, but here goes the bottle. Oh, my God, don't take that bottle, don't take that bottle. And I said, I got you. So I give it to the next conductor, and I said, when you get him off at his destination, give him the bottle. Keep him away from him. Stuff like that, you know, or try to be nice to him. The thing is to try to, you know, be courteous and everything like that to your pastors if you can.
No matter what you thought of.
Well, another thing, you find somebody that's smoking, see, and you get a problem from another place. Well, smoking sign right up there. Will you please go up there in the other car? I think that place you can smoke up there. Or try to be nice and be congenial with them. That's about all.
You enjoyed the passenger conductorship more than the freight?
Well, yes. It was a whole lot easier with me on there with this foot.
Yeah.
I still got a bum foot, but I spent the time on it. Mm-hmm. It tells me when I overwork it out in this yard, you know, cutting grass. And I said, put about 8 hours out, you know, working here, it tells you. Mm-hmm. It's all swelled up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'll cut this off. So.